So, all right, we are now recording. This is the first installment of the untitled, undisclosed, unfiltered, definitely independent, never system bought member spotlight for the Dignity in Schools campaign. I'm Tafari Melisizwe, communications coordinator for the Dignity in Schools campaign, joined by Lorraine Wright. Lorraine, can you introduce yourself?
And I am Lorraine Wright. I vote for me here in Richmond, Virginia.
One of our wonderful members of the Dignity in Schools campaign. And we're going to be featuring and highlighting today Kim Irby of Parents Across America and a couple of other things as well. So first, I want to give a little framework. This is a new thing that's going to be happening with the Dignity in Schools campaign, where each month we're going to highlight a member and an organizer that's doing some really dope and dynamic work in their local area. And we want to bring that work up to the forefront for our members to see, for the public to engage with. And so we're definitely excited and honored to have as our first installment the one and only Kim Irby. So Kim, welcome to the quote-unquote show.
Oh, hey.
Welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. How are you doing today, Kim?
I'm doing well. You know, no complaints. I'm just grateful for this opportunity to actually have this kind of conversation, because it's so often that we don't have a platform where we can lift our own voices. So this is a great opportunity for all of us.
That's right. Well, we're really excited to talk to you, Kim. And like Tafari said, this is going to be really conversational. We want others to get to know you personally, but also get to know a little bit about the organization and what drives you. So this is going to be a really good opportunity for folks to get to know Kim and the awesome work that you're doing on so many fronts. So let's get started, Tafari.
Indeed, indeed. And so, yeah, so we know you, Kim, as the president of the board of Parents Across America and of the Parents Across America Greensboro chapter. If you can tell us a little bit about what Parents Across America is and like what your role is in the organization.
Parents Across America is an organization of that the goal is initially to bring in parents across the nation around issues of education and the quality of education in the United States. And the impact primarily driven by the impact of privatization, whether it's through charter school initiatives or the school to prison pipeline for our children. So that's the driving force behind the creation of Parents Across America. It was created by parents and for parents. And definitely a grassroots initiative in that respect.
Fantastic. That's good stuff. And Kim, like, we all know that people don't just get into this kind of work. So what initially prompted you to get involved in the education justice movement?
You know, the movement has definitely taken on many shapes. When I look back at when I began, it just started through PTA work, right? A friend just says, hey, could you just volunteer to help us out, you know, with our PTA in your kid's school? And then it just became something else, right? As things began to change in public education, your role began to change from volunteering at your kid's school to advocacy, to bringing things to the forefront, you know, exercising your parental power. Is how, you know, I just got launched into this, and it's just been ongoing and it has never stopped. You know, while I'm raising my own 6 children, I'm advocating, right? It's all these parallel things happening, in New York City, all at the same time, primarily impacting our children, right? Mm-hmm. In urban communities, with things that they are saying it's going to improve the education, the quality of education, you know, for our children, when that's not what it's doing, right? There's just more impact of dismantling and dividing us and all these layers is really how I got just launched into something that just started out, I'm just going to be a parent volunteer, you know? And you begin to you be you're concerned. You're concerned about your community. You're concerned not just for your own child.
Right.
That's one thing about this work. I'm not in it just for my own children.
Right.
I'm in it for every child. And you cannot stop. I have not had a chance to breathe on anything. You know, you're just in it. Yeah. And that's how, you know, you just become a part of something else.
Right.
It just
sounds kind of like in this organic evolution, right? It's just like it, you know, certain circumstances almost kind of necessitated, you know, your participation in this movement, and it just kind of kept evolving. So,
I
certainly understand that.
Definitely. And so, yeah, so as you said, Kim, you are currently in North Carolina doing some really amazing work. I want to get back to some of the origin story. New York City, we hear the accent. We hear the accent.
We don't have accents in New York.
Sure don't.
Oh, man.
What are y'all talking about?
And so, tell us a little bit about, you know, you mentioned in some of the preliminary interview stuff that you did some work with the Mother's Agenda.
And you talked
about this role of parent power and parents being, you know, center in all of this leadership and organizing work. So tell us a little bit about the Mother's Agenda.
The Mother's Agenda came together out of a vision with another friend of mine, another mom, Benita Rivera, who realized that people were coming to us because they knew us as being part of, you know, just out voices that were in the community. And it was primarily everything that was happening impacts mothers, right? Mothers are the first teachers. Mothers are always the ones, you know, at the school. You know, mothers are on the front line. Mothers are taking care of children and everybody else. So that was like why we centered it around mothers. And not to exclude anyone who is not a birth mother, but the fact that you are a mother in this community because you are taking care of a child or you're advocating for somebody else's child, you just are a mother. So that's how that came about. You know, we're still like a grassroots organization. We don't have an official 501c3 because of wanting not to be entangled with some other things with government and things like that. So we're really like a very grassroots organization who lifts issues in our own voice, and we come from definitely a space of for Black and brown children who, you know, we know, you know, those parents are definitely the least that have the opportunity to lift their voices.
I can dig it. So cool. So you say you're the mother of six wonderful children. So the Mother's Agenda definitely is a manifestation of the home front as well. What have your children taught you about organizing?
My children definitely, thank goodness that when they go to school, they know how to represent. So I've been very fortunate that I've had few run-ins with the school system for my own children. It was primarily always with someone else's child, another mom or getting involved. But having six children, my children put me in different types of schools in New York City. I had the opportunity. They gave me more opportunities because what I did, I made an agreement with my children that they would never have to all attend the same school, okay? So what that did for me was I was able to focus in on my children individually and access schools that catered to their learning style or their learning need. I was able to do that with all of them. So they all did not attend the same schools at one point in time. I was in six different schools in New York City. So that actually gives me more access to more information, right? More access on the ground with more schools, and I can actually compare, right? I can actually do my own analysis of what's happening in this school that's not happening in this school. You get to look at equity issues, right, around New York City. So that's the kind of, like, I guess I use my children to that advantage, that I was able to just be able to access more schools for myself in New York City and build relationships like that. So
Kim, let me ask you a follow-up question on that. So are we talking private schools or public schools? Because when I was in New York, I remember you had to be located in that district or zone for that school or get a variance. And so it was much more difficult, I think, maybe when I was coming up. So
how did that work? You're right. It probably was a lot different back in that time. But my kids were fortunate that, you know, they were either in a gifted and talented program, so they didn't have to go to the neighborhood school. Not because the neighborhood school wasn't a great school, but opening those doors for them to access those programs and those opportunities, I always threw my kids' name in the hat and for those opportunities for them. So they have access to really good schools in New York City just because, you know, I was aggressive about it. I've been a charter school parent. I even, you know, allowed my children to experience charter schools until that just went in another direction. And I had to get them out of that system. Initially, I started out educating my children with independent Black schools. Okay, Johnson Prep was an independent Black school, Black teachers, Afrocentric, and that's ideally where I wanted all my children to be. But those schools are very hard to sustain because it depends on the income of the families that have sending their children there. So if we don't have the income, then that's how our school fell apart. Parents began, you know, losing jobs, losing income. So it was very hard to sustain. So that's when, you know, all of us, either you decided to homeschool your child or you turned to the public school system. But ideally, I wanted Black children to be educated, my Black children to be educated by Black educators. And I was willing to pay for that as long as I could afford that. So, you know, my children all went to school as soon as they learned how to walk. I believed in early childhood education. So as soon as they learned how to walk, well, I was having a baby every 2 years. So at one point, So I had to get rid of somebody.
That's funny.
You know, so they've been in school a long time. And I think that's what made a difference in their educational experience, you know, and what I believed in personally.
Yeah, and then, you know, for me, you also just demonstrated how creative sometimes we have to get just to have access.
Yeah, you know, and creating those opportunities for our kids, you know, and you have to go get it, you know. Nobody comes really knocking on your door for those opportunities, all right?
You're right about that.
I hope that answers your question.
It did. It answered my question. I'm just so intrigued. And that's some good stuff.
Yeah, no, that's super, super interesting. I didn't know that at all. And it leads me into the next question, which is, I think, spot on, is that, you know, you having this, you know, wide range of experiences from African-centered education to public schools, to charter schools, to private schools, to the school of life that is New York City, or just being up and about in the world. And then you transitioned to Guilford, to North Carolina, and right. Organizing hasn't stopped. You haven't stopped. What has, and oftentimes there's this conversation about, you know, Northern organizers, this historical tension of like Northern organizers or city organizers coming into like rural communities and so on. Mm-hmm. And so here you are doing really dope work in North Carolina. Have you had any, what was the adjustment period in time like there? And then in turn, what has your work looked like since you've been in North Carolina?
Well, the adjustment period was one where, you know, when I first got here, bringing kids here, and not really letting go in the beginning, I still went back to New York, you know, and when you go home, people call on you to still do the work, right? If they know you're coming home, it's like, okay, can you go with us to this meeting? Can you go speak at this, you know, go speak to this thing? And, you know, it took a while for me to actually disconnect and break from New York City, because that was my base, that was all of my networks, you know, like support system. So it took about a good year before I could like really like tell people, you know what, I can't come back. You know, my husband, I got a husband, I gotta be home, I gotta stay home now. And get rooted here. It was not easy. It's still not easy. Coming here, they know you from the north, and if you're from New York, it's like, oh, here she comes, you know. You still have that, and it's amongst my own people lots of times. Getting involved, tried to get involved with the NAACP here. You know, it's a well-known organization. I said, okay, let me start trying that, you know. Okay, we got PTAs, but PTAs here and PTA in New York City is totally different. Then there's that. And here primarily, you know, the PTAs are pretty much run by white moms, you know. I can work with anybody. But, you know, you don't want to always be the token black mom in everything when you know that it's not all about the bake sale, right? You know, it's like, no, I'm not really interested in that, okay? I'm really interested in the quality of education for the children in the building. So that was really hard, and it's been an uphill. That's why Parents Across America, being able to bring that organization with me and being on the board, then it brought me with my own, you know, support, you know, where I have that base always, and I can still do my national work. But doing national work is nice. You still need to take care of home, right? You still need to be a voice in this local community. So I felt that the best way for me to really develop a voice and have a voice here is to run for public office. That is the only way I could get respect for what I have and what I know, because we have to stop fighting with those individuals that do not have our best interests at heart. I had enough of fighting and you know, going places, rallying, marching. They do a lot of that here. You know, they still believe in marches and things like that. And it, what changes? There's, you know, that labor, that's a lot of labor for nothing to change. You know, and you've been here a long time and still nothing has changed, you know. I'm like, no, that's not going to work for me anymore. So I really believe that we need to become the people in power. We need to become the people making the decisions so that we can look out for the best interests of our people, because it's not going to get any better if we don't become those people in those positions.
That, like, that's such a great point, Kim. And I salute you. And I say this because it's really tough to be in such a transparent space when you're talking about being an elected official, right? But, you know, your tenacity, right? Your, you know, sort of resilience is so necessary in spaces like those, because sometimes you're the outlier. You're the sole person kind of holding this position, and sometimes it gets really, really difficult. So can you speak if you've had any sort of experiences where, you know, whatever was on the table for a vote or whatever legislation or whatever policy change, and you might have been the only one either in support or against, and how that turned out?
Well, so far, you know, I've had to learn the players mostly. I can say case in point, as soon as I got elected, we have to begin to choose who's going to be the chair, you know, of the board and the vice chair, these two positions. And the local Black leaders were already telling me who was going to be the chair of our board. Now, they're not even on the board, but they are in position, in enough position to pull me to the side and say, yo, so-and-so is going to be the chair and so-and-so is going to be the vice chair. And immediately I'm looking at them like, who the heck are you? You know, like, I know y'all, the elders, and I kind of know y'all have been, you have been here, but I got elected on my own strength.
Absolutely.
Okay. None of you helped me. First of all, none of you gave me a donation. Okay. So really, no, I'm not even going to go along with you dictating to me what we're going to do. So immediately, you know, I had to like, they understood that I wasn't a bobblehead. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't just go along to get along.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're going to know what I stand for. And that, you know, I have to exercise a vote that I have to live with. I'm not going to come home and be pulling out my hair and be stressed out. Because, you know, and that's public record. So it's important to me to maintain my integrity in this position, even more so. Okay. And it even put more pressure on my children, because I told them, now that I'm an elected official, y'all are an elected family.
That's right.
Okay.
Everybody,
you are our first family now. So don't go to school. Keep acting right. You know, talk to my boys. Stop getting tickets. Okay. Stop getting arrested, you know, for foolishness, you know, and getting caught up in these things that now, because of my name and my position, you attach to me. And this is a small place. This is not New York City. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your name is out there. Your kid name out there. They already know. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a different way that I have to carry myself, you know, in these positions, and them, me being strong and them knowing that I just don't go along with everything, you know, and you cannot tell me how to be in my position.
That's important, Kim. Thank you so
much. Yeah. So we got a lot of decisions coming up. We're going to be talking about the school budget, you know, and those kind of decisions. But I have been very strong at telling this community that I represent a certain part of the whole county, and they are my priority. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I'm not here for the whole county. I know that I make decisions based on the whole county, but I have my constituents. I have my parents in this community that I am sitting for, and I have to make sure that their voices are heard. And I have to make sure that I do not have a personal agenda that is always on the table.
That's right. I love it.
I can dig it. Yeah, no. So we can go ahead and start moving towards winding it down. So yes, you are on the Guilford County School Board. Is a part of you running and successfully running. You said that your campaign was lifted by joining DSC and particularly dealing with the Counselors Not Cops campaign. Talk a little bit about what has the reception been to this conversation around counselors, not cops, demilitarization, those kinds of things in Guilford County?
Well, this is a SRO county. We have to have SROs in our high schools in North Carolina, and they pay for SROs to be in our middle schools. We don't have any SROs in our elementary schools. I guess about 4 years ago, we did actually have a town hall meeting around whether or not we need SROs in our schools. And it was just amazing for me to go to these public hearings. And we are a community that's divided. You know, white folk live where they live, black folk live where they live. And it was interesting to see how the black families came out and said that their relationship with SROs is, you know, the school to prison pipeline. We really don't want SROs in our school. It impacts our budget. We would rather have nurse. We would rather have all the other amenities of school and not pay for an SRO. So you go to another part of the town, you know, in the white communities, the white teachers, well, the SRO is such a great person. I really need that person because what happens if my classroom gets out of control? And, you know, it was just like night and day. And that's when I know that that is a hot topic here. So to me, the Counselors Not Cop campaign gave me a stronger framework to present to the community. It gave me some extra tools, some information to expose Guilford to what is happening outside of North Carolina. Because the view here is just only here, you know, thinking out of the box, thinking about impact across the nation is what I feel is important for me to always bring to the table. That what is happening, you know, in black communities around the nation, and that we're not alone in this struggle, letting the black communities know that they're not alone, you know, with the impact. But they are used to SROs here. And I had a lot of pushback from black community, you know, black people. They were like, oh, you know, they'll never get rid of SROs here. I said, well, it's about them. I said, but it's a culture. It's a mindset that they've led you to believe, right? That you have sacrificed a counselor, a nurse, and a social worker because you need to be protected, you know. Protected from who? You know, protected from right. What? You know, so just having that conversation and being on the front line of saying, I would rather have this as a solution or come to the table and at least let's talk about the purpose of cops in our schools. What is their role? You know, can we have that talk? That was hard because the sheriff who... one of the candidates who was running for sheriff here in Guilford County, black man, he immediately told me, he says, you know, I understand, you know, you're on this campaign, but I'm letting you know now, I can't support that. He says, as a sheriff, I know for a fact that we need SROs in these schools in Guilford County. I know about the drugs that's going on in the schools. And, you know, I said, okay, so you should do something about that. I understand that that's law enforcement. I said, but you mean you can't advocate with me that we also need these other people in place for our children? So they took it as I'm saying, you know, you have no value in the schools, when I'm not saying you don't have a value, but we need to, you know, reexamine what your place is. Right. And, you know, look at other interventions for our children. So, yeah, the black, you know, he got elected. So I'm going to hopefully have another conversation with him because I'm still pursuing this, you know, here in Guilford County for that to change, you know, in our school system. So, yeah, it's pushback because it's the culture. It's what they're used to here.
Well, don't let up, Kim. I know you.
No, I mean, you guys give me the energy, you know, and the backing. And now that, you know, we're a part of one another, it just keeps me motivated, you know, that I've been pushing, you know, Dignity in Schools website more than I've been pushing PAA website, you know, because of those tools that are on, you know what I'm saying, exposing people to that information and coming from a black voice. And I think a lot of it has to do with fear, and they've never seen black people in this way, you right. know, interacting. So it's new, and I know that I just have to, you know, keep along that agenda. You know, I have a few moms that are on board, you know, but you know, it is what it is, and it's a work in progress.
That's right. And Kim, I'm so glad you lifted up sort of the strength of DSC, right? So, you know, I think we do an incredible job, and we definitely have room for improvement, but we do an incredible job of supporting each other and just knowing that I can call on a Kim Irby or a Zakiya Sankara Jabbar, you know, or
yeah.
That's really important to know that we have this network of folks that are doing similar things and have some, you know, an advocacy sort of mindset, but also just some expertise around this, and they know what it looks like, so we can confront it when we are aware of, you know, what the issue is. So it was just really important to have this network. So thanks for lifting that up.
Yeah, it's good.
Definitely, and I definitely second that for sure. And one of the things that you said that resonated with me really strongly, Kim, too, is that talking about, you know, this conversation of education justice is not just about education. It's not just about school buildings. We're really talking about community development. We're talking about people and their lives and the societies, both small and large, that they find themselves in. And so hearing the conversation, and I'm glad that, you know, in some ways you are, and a lot of us are, opening these conversations and making them more complex to talk about, you know, the classroom environment is not just a school issue. The issue with substance trafficking and so on and so forth, or whatever the issues of a particular place are, have ramifications and implications that extend beyond the school building and the school environment. And so when we're talking about making changes in one place, we're also talking about that to try to affect change in other places. So counselors, not cops, is not just a school thing, community thing. Culturally relevant education is not just a school thing. It's what type of people do we want to make in the world type thing. And so I'm really, really glad that you brought that bringing more of that complexity to the conversation. Because like you're saying, it's not that any particular group anywhere is willingly not aware of these things. It's just oftentimes that the relationships, the particular information hasn't been presented or delivered or what have you in a way where these other ideas can come up. So I just want to say, too, that I appreciate you and your work for championing that work in an important part of the world that is not talked about enough. I think that the more we can talk about rural organizing and off the beaten path, off the mainstream path organizing, there's a lot of fertile ground for some major changes to happen. And so as we get ready to land this plane, kind of flip it, how can the campaign assist you and parents across America more? And also thinking, again, this is also dealing with like the general public. You know, how do you want folks to know your work, and how can people support your work?
You know, I really would like more opportunities I probably speak. You know, I've been fortunate that through Parents Across America, we, you know, submit proposals to go participate in different conferences and, you know, making sure that parent voice is heard and that it's a Black parent. I think that is just very important, because so often we have other people speaking for us and using the things and challenges up in our communities as ways that they support their livelihood, okay? They support their livelihood on the backs of brown, poor families, right? We need mental health and all these different things. We need, you know, all these other services are developed and people remain employed under, you know, things that are happening to our community. So I just want more opportunities to go and speak with those that feel like they have no voice, and then speak with those in power. I think that we, as a, you know, as a organization together, that we need to really be more national, have more national presence now, and see how we can develop more networks where we control the narrative. You know, we have our own script about what we're going to say and how we're going to say it. I think that was like culture cure, you know, at the Aben conference, you know, Brother Kelvin. I think we need a platform like that for the work that we're doing. So I can't say how you can support so much me personally, but it's something that we all need, you know, in supporting the work at hand. So I will not be that selfish, you know, and just think about me.
Cam, you did an amazing job. Tafari, I don't know if you have any other last questions or if that was the wrap up, but I certainly appreciate the opportunity, Kim, just to get to know you a little bit better. I know we met out in Portland with the amazing Sheila Washington Warren and Portland Parent Union. But I just want to say I appreciate you and the work that you do. I appreciate your resilience. I appreciate just how steadfast you are in this work, because it's not glamorous. It's not easy. None of those things. But I salute you, sis, because this is where we really need some divine intervention and some supernatural strength sometimes just to fight this good fight. So I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Ma'am.
Yep, and no, and that was it. So again, thank you, Kim. Thank you, Lorraine. For people that are watching this on the Dignity in Schools page, please share this video. If there's something that you liked about it, let us know. If there's something that you've learned, let us and someone else know. So share the work so we can continue to grow the work. So again, thank you, Kim, for your time. Thank you, Lorraine.